Chapter 23. 22 May 1937. Joey knew it was possible for him to take the wages now, but he needed to plan carefully and decide on the best time to do it. He had noticed that when the last day of the month fell on a Friday, the money for the monthly paid staff was in the safe overnight too. That set the date for him. The next time it would occur would be the last Thursday in June. If he was going to take the payroll, he might as well do it when he could have both the monthly and the weekly pay. He hoped the dates would coincide with a race meeting somewhere, and that Greg would take himself off. That would be the ideal. Joey didn't want to be here when the loss was discovered. The police would be called in. Everyone would be questioned. He'd be a nervous wreck if he had to sit at his desk through all that. He was due for 2 weeks' holiday, so he immediately applied for the last week in June and the first in July. Every year a boarding house in Blackpool was advertised on the office notice board because it was owned by Miss Peacock's sister. He'd heard other clerks say it was all right, that they'd enjoyed their holiday. "Nothing to do with me." Miss Peacock's flint grey eyes surveyed him haughtily when he asked her about it. "You'll have to write off and make your booking direct." He booked his 2 weeks as soon as he got back to his desk, and made sure everybody in the office and factory knew how much he was looking forward to it. He meant to go. It would do him good to have a change and a rest from this place. He'd sent half a dozen postcards back here, telling them what a good time he was having and how wonderful the boarding house was. He'd come home on Thursday night to do the job and go straight back to Blackpool afterwards. If he wasn't around the office for a few days before and after it happened, hopefully he wouldn't be suspected of doing it. Even if he was, he'd make sure he had an alibi. He'd arrange it so he wasn't missed at the boarding house. He'd be there at supper and again at breakfast. He'd take his car but keep it out of sight and tell everybody he'd come by train. They'd find out he couldn't get there and back by public transport in the time. He had an uncomfortable feeling in the pit of his stomach whenever he thought of it. But it would be safe enough. He was going to take the wages without help from anyone. Strictly on his own. Much the safest way. He told nobody of his plans, and he wouldn't have to share the proceeds. Just before he went on holiday, he'd step up all his other schemes. He would take all the checks coming in the mail from the big wholesalers and put them in his own accounts, and he meant to make several more trips to the safe to get at those checkbooks so he could draw on Evans's accounts at the same time. He was going to take every cent of Greg Mortimer's he could get his hands on. If his plans worked out, he'd have the revenge he craved. He would ditch his job. He was sick of spending every minute of the day at his desk, and he'd be able to manage without his pittance of a wage if he played his cards right. But he'd have to give notice and work the week required, because it would pin suspicion on him if he suddenly disappeared at the same time the wages went. All he had to decide on now was the right moment to put his plans into action. He would need to be very careful to get his timing right. To take the maximum amount from Greg Mortimer, he wanted to start taking checks as soon as possible. But to start too soon would increase the risk of its being discovered before he got away on holiday. Joey was wondering if he'd dare risk starting 3 weeks before. He knew he'd feel safer with two. Stickler, the accountant, never took very long to find anything amiss. When he noticed this, he'd be through the department with a fine-tooth comb, and Joey wanted to be away before that happened. He decided he'd definitely go full steam ahead for the last 2 weeks. Perhaps he'd risk starting a few days earlier if everything was quiet. When a month before Joey's holiday, Stickler went off sick with gallbladder trouble, and the news was he'd be undergoing an operation which would keep him off work for a couple of months, Joey decided to go into action immediately. It meant he could get away with much more than he'd expected to in the beginning. Nick climbed the stairs at his lodgings, and in the privacy of his own room re-read the second letter he'd had from Edmund Stanton. It made him sigh with indecision. He'd made up his mind he wanted Lizzie. Nobody else would do. If she felt the same, he wanted them to be married. Nothing was going to stand in his way over this. The trouble was, it had made him dither again about his job. It was 10 days since he'd had Edmund Stanton's first letter. He'd offered immediate full-time general labouring work on a farm out on the Cheshire Plain, near Beeston, or on another in East Anglia. Both were too far away to see much of Lizzie, so he'd said no. He'd wanted to have more time to spend with her, so he'd written back to resign from his part-time job. Even so, Stanton had now written that he expected an under-manager's post to come up shortly, and that he'd be prepared to consider Nick for that. It left him in an undecided state. It didn't make it any easier to have Hannah and Hugo discussing his future with such kindly intent. He'd found it difficult to tell Hannah he was thinking of throwing up the job she'd found for him. He'd only hinted it might be a possibility, but he hadn't made up his mind one way or the other. He was hopeful about the under-manager's job, but it wasn't a firm offer yet, and he didn't know what it entailed or when it would come. He was afraid Evans's might pay better anyway, and if he was to marry Lizzie, he had to have a job. Hugo felt he had to spend some days in London to oversee his businesses, but he begrudged the time he spent away from Hannah. He'd come home a day earlier than he'd intended. He found London a lonely place now. All the way up on the train, the rain had lashed against the carriage windows. There was nothing to see but lowering skies and fields lost in mist. He'd let his mind dwell on Hannah. He was afraid he was being selfish. What he was doing could make things more difficult for her. When he reached Woodside, he took a taxi. He'd told nobody he was coming, made no arrangements at Ince. He hadn't even told Hannah. Her face lit up when she saw him. He heard pleasure in her voice. Her welcome warmed him. She drew him into the cretonne-filled sitting room. The babies were there, and Edna, who began gathering them and their equipment up to remove them to the nursery. "I've come for a cup of tea," he said. "I think I need cheering up." "Come to the fire." Hannah poked it into a blaze that brightened the room on this dark afternoon. Her dark eyes comforted him. "What's the matter, Hugo?" He caught her hand between his two cold ones. "You know I love you," he said gently. It wasn't a question, he'd told her often. "I want you to know you've made me very happy over these last months." "Hugo, you make me happy too." He could see it in her face. She shone with love. "I've never felt like this before, not ever. For years I didn't dare think of it as love, but I felt it. To hear you say it, well, it's wonderful." He sighed and hesitated. "One thing does make me sad." "About me?" "Yes. You're so much younger. When I'm dead and gone—" "Oh, Hugo, for heaven's sake." She was smiling up at him when he wanted her to be serious. "It will happen, love. The big disadvantage of being an old man's darling. I'll love you always, watch over you from up there."
"You aren't going just yet?" She laughed.
"No, but I've always tried to look to the future, to foresee those things that will affect my businesses. This will come. Nothing is more certain, and it won't be easy for you."
"Don't talk about it."
"I want to, Hannah. I'd like to see you prepared."
"Hugo, don't make it sound as though you're going next week."
"My father died very suddenly. He was younger than I am now. Who can say when it will happen? I want you to know when it does that you gave me what I wanted most in life."
"But you're giving me what I most wanted too."
"Perhaps." He tried to be more gentle with her. "It may come as a shock when I go. I hate to think of leaving you, that I won't be here to comfort you, to tell you I love you."
"Hugo, it won't come for years yet. Why should it? You're healthy. Anybody would think you were really ancient."
"I'm on borrowed time already. None of us can live forever."
"Has something happened?" She was serious at last.
"Sometimes I have a feeling," he said slowly, "a foreboding." He felt her shiver. "Just your imagination," she said. Joey's stomach was churning the next morning. The time had come to step up all his activities. When the morning post came to his desk, he slid every letter but had an accompanying check into his drawer. He meant to spend his dinner hour paying them and others he'd collected into his accounts. Joey was very glad he had the car. He needed it now. He left the office a few minutes ahead of the crowd and drove off before anyone he knew was likely to see him. He parked in a quiet backwater close to Grange Road, where he made out his paying-in slips and ate his sandwiches. He put on his Macintosh and Trilby before leaving the car. Now he'd done this a few times, he thought of it as a pleasant break away from his desk. He felt different in his disguise. Reasonably safe, though the spectacles bothered him a little. When he wore them, anything at a distance looked fuzzy. He put them on just before he pushed open the swing door to the bank. The customers and the black and white stone floor were a little hazy. He tried to put confidence in his step as he went up to the mahogany counter. As he waited, he checked his paying-in slips. He could read them well enough. The cashier was stamping them. Joey pushed across another check to withdraw money to keep himself in funds and to pay Billy and Eli. He felt he was making progress to have money like this in his pocket. On his left, he heard another cashier say, "Good afternoon, Mr. Draper." Joey was overwhelmed with sudden panic. He swung round before he could stop himself, and then, because the customer's image was blurred, he'd been about to lift his spectacles. He just managed to stop that in time. Draper had been speaking to Miss Peacock when he left the office. Now he was no more than 6 yards up the counter. Joey had never given a thought to the possibility of being seen in here by someone who knew him. Quickly, he turned his back, but his heart was hammering, and he couldn't get his breath. Every moment he expected to feel a hand on his shoulder. He had to fight the urge to turn and run. Slowly, so slowly, the clerk was counting out the banknotes for him. He had to bite on his tongue to stop himself shouting, "Hurry up!" He pulled his trilby down over his forehead. At last the notes were pushed across the counter towards him. His fingers felt stiff and clumsy. He couldn't pick them up. He only just managed to stop one fluttering to the floor. "Thank you." Joey knew he should not have spoken. His voice could be recognized, too. "Good day, Mr. Evans," the clerk said clearly. That made him cringe, too. He reached the door, took off his spectacles, and almost ran back to his car. He stripped off his disguise and put it out of sight, then sat clinging to the steering wheel in a cold sweat. He'd meant to visit other banks. He'd a dozen checks to pay in and money he'd meant to move. He couldn't do it now. He'd have to put it off. He felt thoroughly shaken up. Even worse, he didn't know whether Draper had recognized him. He'd have to go back to his desk and see what happened. Joey was in time to see Draper go to his office without a glance in his direction. Time seemed to stand still. Halfway through the afternoon, Draper came back into the hall and seemed to be coming towards him. Joey closed his eyes, thinking his end was near, but Draper put some papers on Stanley Bream's desk and stood talking to him. It was only when he returned to his own office that Joey began to breathe normally again. The days were passing too quickly for Lizzie. She spent most of them mooning round Oak Ridge, trying to make up her mind what to do. She was afraid Hannah must think her very strange. It was Tuesday, the day she told Joey she'd go home to spend the evening with him, and she was dreading it. Home. It seemed she still counted Onslow Road as home. She'd known from the moment Nick had told her he loved her that she couldn't go back to live with Joey. The break had to be permanent. Taking the decision didn't make it any easier. She didn't know how she was going to tell him. Lizzie spent the morning helping Hannah cook steak and mushroom pies, and was given one with the other ingredients she'd need to make a meal for herself and Joey. She went down to Onslow Road early in the afternoon and let herself in. Dirty dishes were piled in the sink, and the living room was dusty and untidy. Lizzie swallowed the pang of pity she felt. She'd been afraid Joey wouldn't look after himself. The house looked as though he hadn't lifted a finger from the day she'd left. Upstairs, one glance at the rumpled double bed hardened her resolve. It was Nick she loved and wanted. She could never come back to live with Joey. Not the way he would want her to live. She was glad she'd come while Joey was still at work. It gave her time to strip the bed and put on clean sheets, time to wash them and the clothes he'd let lying on the floor and peg them on the line in the yard. She packed some more of her things and left the case behind the front door room where he wouldn't see it. She had the table set and the pie warming in the oven when she heard his key turn in the lock. He came to the kitchen door and stared at her, tight-lipped and sullen.
"I didn't think you'd come."
"I said I would. We need to talk." She saw hope blare in his strange eyes, and it scared her. She mustn't give him hope.
"You've cleaned the place up. It's not the same without you. I'm glad you're back."
"No, Joey. I came to tell you how sorry."
"What's the good of that?"
Hope was dying. She was kindling anger in its place.
"I want you here."
"In front of everybody at Oakridge. We couldn't talk." He straightened up, alert now.
"You are staying, aren't you? You are staying now."
"No, Joey." She felt terrible. "I came to make it up. I can't stand being at sixes and sevens with you."
"For God's sake." He was on red alert now. "You could make it up by saying you'll stay. It's as simple as that."
Lizzie was silent. She'd known he'd see it as desertion. She could not stay.
"Why not? What have I done to deserve this?"
"Nothing, Joey. It's not that." His thin face was flushed with rage.
"You'll come back. We belong together. What have you got in common with the Mortimers?"
"Nick says..."
"Nothing in common with him either. It might take time for you to see it, but you'll come back."
"No, Joey." Her voice croaked with agony.
"All right. We've had a hard time recently. I know I've not been easy to live with, but I'll try harder. I'll change. I'll show you I'm better than Nick. I'll make us richer than the Mortimers. I'll get you back."
She snatched her coat and ran from the house without even getting the meal on the table. She forgot the case she'd meant to take with her. There was no talking to Joey in his present mood. She'd done more harm than good by trying. Another week went by, but Lizzie felt no better. She found it harrowing just to think about it. Now baby Paul gurgled contentedly on her knee. She gave him a little hug before popping the last spoonful of dinner in his mouth. "All gone. Ready for your pudding now?" As she reached for the second bowl, she found Hannah's eyes watching her from across the room. She was feeding Piers. "You are happy with us, Lizzie?"
"Yes, yes, I am."
She tried to smile. She would be if she hadn't had to hurt Joey to do it. "I'm settling in." But changes were taking place too quickly for that. "I'm glad you've decided to stay with me. I like having you here, and you're so good with the babies. I enjoyed them, and it's lovely to think they're my half-brothers. But you don't really need my help." Hannah had employed a nursemaid to replace Edna. "Nancy's here every day but Sunday." "There's plenty to do with the twins, plenty for us all to do. I don't know how mothers manage on their own, and Nick seems happier now you're here. I think you're settling each other down. He seems very taken with you, Lizzie." Nick was on Lizzie's conscience, too. She was still trying to find the courage to tell him she'd been living with Joey as his wife. She wanted Nick to think well of her. At the cinema, the girls had said men didn't marry fast women, and she'd been more than fast. She kept the spoonfuls of rice pudding coming, and Paul kept opening his mouth for them like a baby sparrow. Lizzie shook herself. She had made the right decision. Of course she was happy here, but she did seem more moody. One minute she'd be bursting with happiness because Nick said he loved her. The next, after he'd gone home, she'd be hurting inside, thinking of Joey alone in a messy, unmade bed. Although she loved Nick, it wasn't easy to break the cords that bound her to Joey. She still hadn't, quite. Paul was dozing in her arms. Lizzie got up to put him outside in the pram, while Hannah carried Piers to settle him at the other end. "I'll set the table," Lizzie said, going into the dining room. Nick and Hugo were expected for Sunday lunch. Hannah came to twist the napkins into fancy shapes and make sure everything sparkled. Already delicious scents were coming from the kitchen. Hannah had found a cook who came in for a few hours each day. Lizzie thought it a very comfortable life. She was beginning to feel more at home here, though occasionally she missed the little house where she'd been sole housewife. Nick arrived 5 minutes before Hugo. Lizzie danced to the door to let him in. He kissed her in the big hall when he stopped to leave his hat on the table. He didn't seem to care that Hannah was crossing at that moment with flowers she'd picked for the table. He was in a buoyant mood. Lizzie sensed a new excitement in him. He kept them amused throughout the meal. They were having coffee afterwards when Hugo said, "Nick, what's this Lizzie's been telling me about you being offered a job in farming?" "Yes, I have," he admitted, looking embarrassed. "I've decided against it."
"Why?" Lizzie asked. "I thought you were tempted."
"Don't try to please your parents," Hugo urged. "If you want any satisfaction in this life, you must follow your own inclinations."
"You're putting off the decision," Hannah told him severely. "In a year or two you'll be dissatisfied again. Grasp the nettle now."
"My offer still stands if you want to train with a more efficient company in London, but you must decide where your natural abilities and interests lie." "Thank you, sir. I'm very grateful, but—"
"His father won't like it, Hugo," Hannah said, "if you encourage him to take up farming after all."
"It's not that."
Nick seemed covered with confusion, his good humour gone. He seemed unable to look at any of them.
"I hardly know what to say." "There's no need to say anything," Hugo told him. "You must make up your own mind. If you do decide on a business career, you know where I am." "Don't think I'm not grateful. Perhaps I'm getting used to Evans's." "Nick, all I want is to help you make your own choices and settle down."
"Lizzie is doing that," Hannah smiled, her dark eyes twinkling. Nick stood up. He seemed desperate to escape again.
"We won't be back for tea, Hannah. I'm taking Lizzie up on Thurstiston Common to walk our dinner off. Then we'll probably go into West Kirby."
Lizzie couldn't understand what had got into Nick. She would have expected him to know exactly what he wanted and make every effort to get it.
"We'll be back in time to babysit for you this evening," he said.
It was a blustery day with fitful sunshine and cooler than it had been of late. Lizzie was stepping out briskly.
"Hang on a minute," said Nick. "When we get to the top, I want us to have a talk."
That sent the blood rushing into her cheeks. She sensed Nick was going to propose, and though she wanted that badly, it also meant she had to tell him. She didn't want secrets of any sort between them. He was spreading his mackintosh on the moorland heather in the lee of a large rock. It sheltered them from the brisk breeze blowing straight off the Irish Sea. From here they could see for miles. The Manx ferry was coming into the channel to enter the Mersey, and behind it a cargo ship. They could see across the Dee to the Welsh hills. Below them she could see roads winding, and houses like toys spread along them. She sat down beside him, knowing what would happen next if she were with Joey. But Nick was different. He would hold back. She would not expect love like that until she had his wedding band on her finger. He didn't know she ached for him. Ached, too, because Joey was always there between them. Nick's golden brown eyes were serious.
"Am I taking the fences too fast for you, Lizzie? I know I'm going at breakneck speed."
"No," she choked.
"Marry me, Lizzie."
She couldn't meet his gaze. Nick was offering her everything. She felt heady with enchantment.
"I mean, why wait if we've both made up our minds?"
You do love me, don't you?
You know I do. I love you very much.
She closed her eyes and took a deep breath. She must tell him now, but the words she'd been rehearsing were gone.
Then we are engaged. I've brought you a ring. It's been burning a hole in my pocket all afternoon.
He took out a small leather box and opened it.
Do you like it? 3 diamonds in a row.
Lizzie could only see the fire of them flashing in the sunlight. Tears were glazing her eyes. What a coward she was.
If you don't like it, we can take it back and choose something else.
She blinked hard, and the ring came into focus.
It's beautiful, Nick.
She smiled up at him, but Joey's face danced before her eyes.
Here, then, let's get it on your finger. Does it fit?
Yes.
It was almost a sob. She wanted to bury her face in the rough tweed of his jacket.
I love you, Lizzie. I'll try and make you happy.
His smile lit up his face. She should have told him. She'd had the right opportunity. Even now she could say,
There's something I want you to know before we tell anyone.
Somehow she couldn't make the words come.
Let's not wait too long to get married. I'd like it to be soon, Lizzie.
Nick lay down and put his hands behind his head.
I'm earning enough at Evans's.
Lizzie sat up straighter.
Is that why you've changed your mind about wanting a farming job?
Nick looked self-conscious.
A bit embarrassing with Hugo, wasn't it? He probably thinks I'm a complete buffoon, telling him I want a job in farming 1 minute and then changing my mind when I have it offered.
I think you should still take it. Grab it, Nick. It's what you want, isn't it?
I've decided to stay with Evans's. You know farm labouring doesn't pay much, and I can't ask you to live on fresh air.
She laughed.
I've lived on fresh air before now, Nick. Nobody's better at it than I am. I can do it again.
He was frowning.
There's no house offered with the job. If I'd gone to agricultural college, it might have been different.
Nick, I still think you should take it.
I'll be content here if I have you.
Lizzie sucked on a stem of grass.
You do that for me? Carry on working at Evans's?
Nick was being so honest with her, so generous. She could see love in his eyes, which wouldn't leave her face.
I'd do anything for you.
Lizzie swallowed. She had to explain about Joey. If she was to be happy, Nick had to know. She couldn't let him marry her in ignorance, or Joey would be a ghost between them always. She forced the words out.
Nick, before we met up again, there was Joey.
I know, he said gently.
I loved him.
I know.
He put a finger on her lips. She pushed it away. He didn't know she'd been a wife to Joey in everything but name for the last 2 years. She opened her mouth again, but he was already going on.
Do you think I don't know how close you were? I know you found it painful leaving him like that, but you did leave him. Let's forget Joey. He's behind you now.
His lips were on hers again. Lizzie knew she hadn't made him understand. It was almost as though he didn't want to. She felt full of love for him. Nick felt he was treading on air as he took Lizzie back to Oak Ridge. Her slanting blue eyes were shining, and her fair hair was wind-tossed because he'd taken her hat off up on the common. Hannah and Hugo were having a drink in the sitting room when they went in.
"We've something to tell you," Nick announced proudly.
Lizzie went forward looking shy. She held out her left hand to show off her ring. Hugo leapt to his feet to kiss her, and Nick felt his hand being shaken warmly. Hannah laughed with delight and made a big fuss. She found a bottle of champagne, which she gave him to open. The cork came out with a swoosh, and champagne spilled over. He watched Lizzie, her cheeks flushed with excitement. They drank to their future, and he knew she was as thrilled as he was.
"We must phone your mother."
Hannah seemed almost as delighted as Nick was himself.
"Clarissa will be pleased for you."
Nick wasn't sure. He was afraid she might have preferred Marion Dodge. Hannah's brown eyes were shining with affection for them both as she picked up the phone and asked to be connected with Yarrow Hall Farm. Then she pushed it into his hand. He felt at a loss for words because they were all listening.
"I'm engaged to be married, Mother."
"Who to?"
"Lizzie O'Malley."
There was a silence. Then Clarissa said,
"You've rather taken my breath away. I am pleased, Nick, just surprised."
All the time, Lizzie's blue eyes were sparkling at him over her glass. Hannah took the handset from him.
"Clarissa, he didn't lead up to that very gracefully. What a shock for you. You must come and see them both. Why don't you pack a bag and come in the next day or so? You know I'd love to see you."
He could hear the tones of his mother's voice distorted by the wire. She sounded quite excited, too. Clarissa came to stay a few days later. Nick happened to be at Oak Ridge the evening she arrived. He was uneasy. He knew he was looking for the disapproval he always seemed to get from his parents, in her words, in her face, in her manner. For once there was no sign of it.
"Lizzie, I'm so pleased for you." She'd taken the girl into her arms. "Welcome to the family. It's lovely that Nick's chosen someone we already know so well."
Seeing his mother with Lizzie, he realized Clarissa had always been fond of her. He need have no worries on that score. He'd seen Lizzie almost every evening since the engagement. Sometimes he'd taken her for a walk, and sometimes to the cinema. Hannah had invited him to come to Oak Ridge whenever he wanted, and he was always included in a meal if he happened to be there. At last he was happy with the way his own affairs were going. Today Nick sat at his desk and wrestled with the figures before him. He couldn't stop his eyes straying to Joey O'Malley. He was sprawling over his desk, 15 yards in front. Joey didn't seem to be concentrating on his work either. He was restless, opening and closing the drawers of his desk. Nick had worked in sales, personnel, and buying for several months each. He'd been in the accounts department now for a month, but felt he hardly knew what he was doing. His personal affairs had tended to push thoughts of work to the back of his mind. Mr. Stickler, the manager, was supposed to be showing him how the department ran, but he'd gone off sick 3 days after Nick had moved here. With Mr. Draper, his second-in-command, busy with the wages, and the senior clerk on compassionate leave, Nick felt he'd been left to cope with his job too soon. He'd asked questions of the other clerks, tried to feel his way round, done his best to keep the books up to date, not really knowing whether what he did was right or not. He had a feeling that something was wrong. There were very few checks coming in. He couldn't understand why they'd suddenly stopped. He'd checked the last year's records, and they'd come in at a steady pace all the year round. But in the last 2 weeks they'd been drying up. For the last 3 days there hadn't been any at all in the mail. He didn't understand it. The clerk said, "Just a fluke," and seemed glad they had less work to do. "We'll be inundated next week, you'll see. It happens like this sometimes." As far as Nick could see, it never had before. Joey, too, said, "Just a fluke." Nick knew Joey too well to trust him. He'd always been in a fever to get rich. He'd been totally obsessed with the idea, and Nick knew he wasn't above helping himself to what didn't belong to him. He'd seen him do it with his own eyes at Yarrow. Quite deliberately, he pushed his suspicions of Joey to the back of his mind. He had to. He knew how Lizzie felt about him. For her sake, he'd tried to like him, made an effort to seek out his better points. But he knew he'd never trust him. He owed it to Lizzie to keep his suspicions to himself. She'd never forgive him if he wrongly blamed Joey. Yet something was dreadfully wrong with the figures he had to work with. Production figures were high. The toffee was going out, but nobody was paying for it. If fraud it was, then it was massive fraud, and that was another reason he didn't believe it could be Joey. He was a small-time thief, more likely to be someone in a more senior position. He mentally checked through the staff and failed to come up with a name, but then he hardly knew them. Nick opened the books on his desk. He was even more worried now. There was only one way he was going to get this off his mind. he would have to tell Greg and let him sort it out. He gathered all his ledgers together and went over to the alcove. Miss Peacock was missing from her desk. He tapped on Greg's door before pushing it open. Greg was drinking his morning coffee, standing in a patch of pale sunlight by his window. His body was thickening with overeating. Already there were lines of indulgence marring his handsome face.
"Hello, Nick. I think we're going to have a fine day. The mist is lifting nicely."
"Yes.
Can I have a word? Is it important?"
Greg came back to his desk to put his empty cup on the tray.
"I was just going out."
"Well, yes, it is."
Nick frowned in concentration.
"There's something funny going on with the accounts. I can't see that we're going to make any profit this year. There's no money coming in. Let me show you."
He started to lay out his ledgers in front of Greg's leather swivel chair.
"I haven't much time now."
Greg remained standing, easing his sleeve up to consult his Rolex Oyster.
"Traffic can soon build up."
His blue eyes looked into Nick's as he smiled.
"Business seems to be in a bit of a trough. We didn't do so well last year or the year before. Bring your books back on Tuesday, Nick, and we'll go into it then."
"Next Tuesday?"
"Yes, I'm taking a few days off, having a long weekend."
"Oh."
Nick had heard Greg went to almost every race meeting in the country.
"I don't think it's just a business trough."
"What do you mean?"
Greg was frowning.
"It could be fraud," he said reluctantly.
He hadn't meant to spell it out like this. Really, he'd wanted a second opinion first. Perhaps he was doing something wrong?
"Surely not, Nick. You're only imagining it. I do wish old Stickler would come back. I think he's swinging the lead a bit now. How long has he been off?"
"About 3 weeks. But he won't be back yet. He only had his operation the other day."
"You're doing very well, Nick, to cope like this."
Nick nodded resentfully, afraid he wasn't coping at all. Greg wouldn't listen to him. He was acting as though he was afraid he'd missed the first race.
"Is there racing at Newbury today?"
"Tomorrow at Epsom."
Greg gave him a look which told him to mind his own business. He was putting on his smart new Macintosh. Nick closed his ledgers and gathered them together. If Greg attached more importance to racing than listening to fears of his company being defrauded, then so be it.